Fast cookery, damp clothes, and tar struck me as I stepped down. Two long, cushion-covered seats flanked the cabin, and a long wooden table took up most of the space in the middle. There were built-in storage lockers and shelves, one of which held a collection of battered books and naval charts. The deck overhead was low at each side, but rose up in the middle, where a coach house roof with a skylight gave more headroom. At the far end, a sliding door led to a narrow space which held the oil-fired cooking stove and a folding washstand. Beyond that, there was a little sleeping cabin with two short and narrow bunks on each side and a shallow drawer beneath each one to store our clothes. I confess that I had begun to wonder whether I should ever have accepted my old college friend's invitation. After we had drunk our tea, I crawled into my bunk bed, lying uncomfortably between the rough blankets, until I finally fell asleep. Next morning, I woke suddenly as a torrent of water shot through the open skylight above me. "Sorry, I'm scrubbing down the deck." "Slept well? Come up and have a swim." I stumbled up the ladder to find that Davis had sailed out of the harbour while I was asleep, before dropping anchor. I dived overboard and found myself in the loveliest fjord of the Baltic Sea. After a short and furious swim, I climbed back on board to find that my friend had prepared a splendid breakfast of crisp and steaming bacon, fresh white bread, and tea. The little cabin looked snug and welcoming in the morning sunshine which poured in through the skylight, and I began to feel that my holiday might turn out well after all. "Let's wash up, then get underway at once," Davis said, and sail down the fjord. Shortly afterwards, I joined him on deck. He seemed to be everywhere at once, hauling ropes, pulling up the big anchor, and hoisting the sails. I had been yachting before, but my practical knowledge was very limited, and all I did was to get in his way. "Look, you may as well know that I'm an utter duffer at sailing," I said. "I've never done it without a crew, but I'm willing to learn if you'll teach me." Davis smiled. "I'll be glad to," he said, and from that moment onwards, under his patient guidance, I gradually learned enough to be able to help. During the next few days, we sailed east across the open Baltic to Sonderburg, and then to the northwest shore, where we spent the night in a sheltered anchorage. When I woke, on the 1st of October, I found the Dulcibella wrapped in a fog. It was silent and clammy, with nothing visible from her deck but the ghostly hull of a sailing barge at anchor close by. We were just beginning to clear away the breakfast things when there was a sound of a step on deck and two sea boots appeared on the ladder. A little man in oilskins and a sou'wester hat was stooping towards us in the cabin door, smiling affectionately at Davis out of a round, grizzled beard. "This is Schiffer Bartels, of the sailing barge Johannes," Davis said. Bartels stayed for a while and drank a cup of tea with us. He said nothing about how he and Davis had met, and I made a note to ask Davis later. As he left us to return to the Johannes in his rowing boat, Bartels waved his finger at me. "You must take good care of your friend, Herr Carruthers. He should stay in the Baltic now that the summer is over. It is not good that his little boat should return to the North Sea in ugly weather. He thinks he cannot drown, but he may not be so lucky the next time." After our visitor had gone, I turned towards Davis. "What did Bartels mean by the next time?" I asked. "Were you in trouble when you last met Bartels? And surely there can be no question of us going to the North Sea at this time of year." Davis sat down and paused for a moment, as if making a decision. "I suppose I may as well tell you everything," he said. "Bartels helped me out of a bit of a mess about 3 weeks ago. It's been fearfully on my..."